Welcome to The Generative Age,
a podcast that explores the rapidly evolving world of generative AI and its impact on education.
Guided by EdTech director, author, and Nightscape board member, Alana Winnick, we are joined by experts and practitioners in the field who are shaping this course of artificial intelligence in the classroom.
Whether you're an educator, administrator, technology leader, or simply interested in the future of education, join us on this journey through the generative age, powered by Nightscape. Welcome back to another episode of The Generative Age. I'm so excited to feature today's guest, Holly Clark. We've been talking for so long and we've been very flexible with our dates, and here we are, and I'm so excited to have you on.
Thanks. I'm really excited.
It's been really fun, you know, pre-briefing with you before the episode. We just talked for a very long time. Holly's like a wealth of knowledge, so I'm really excited for her to share everything with you and what she has been doing. So first, Holly, do you just want to give us a elevator pitch of your career path and tell us how you got to where you are today?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. In 1999, actually, I was teaching at a school in Menlo Park, and I was talking to the parents about what I thought education could do for technology. And one of the parents came up to me after this back to school night and said, "Tomorrow, I'm going to get you a one-to-one classroom." And it wasn't even called a one-to-one. He said, "I'm going to get a computer for every kid." So basically, I have never met anyone, and I'm sure they exist, who's had a one-to-one classroom longer than me. So I've been doing this blended experience for a while. I can't even do the math. Looks like quite a bit of time. And so that being one of the first teachers in the nation to have that experience has allowed me to be on stages and to talk to people and for people to bring me in. So it kind of just changed the whole trajectory of where I was going. That early one-to-one experience. And then I became a director of innovation and a director of this. And then now I'm still in the classroom a little bit, but more as a coach. And it's here in San Diego, and it's when I have the time. And most of the time I'm out helping school districts all over the world.
That's incredible. So first of all, what did you teach when you were in the classroom with your one-to-one computer initiative? Where was that? What level?
So it was seventh grade language arts and history or social studies. No one's ever asked that. That's interesting. Thanks.
Really?
Yeah.
Ever? I feel like that's so important. What have you taught? What's your, have you taught anything else besides that? Or is that middle school?
Middle school language arts and social studies has been where I was doing as a teacher, but then I've overseen K through 12 and helped all kinds of teachers now. But that was where I started. And I love middle school.
Yeah. I came from elementary school, and it's funny because I went from my last year in one classroom, inclusion kindergarten, to being based out of a high school with our good friend Adam Pease when we were in a different district. So I went from K to 12 within a summer. So that was a little bit shocking, but I think it was really great for my career to be able to see all of that in a short period of time. Mm-hmm.
And pedagogy of learning is pedagogy. And I think people get this, I'll walk into a training and there'll be kindergarten teachers and they'll be there with, let's say, AP history teachers. And they'll think, how could this apply to all of us? And really learning is learning no matter what grade level you are. I'm not teaching you decoding skills or how to read. I'm teaching you how kids learn. So it's the same.
And that's one of the questions I actually had for you was, being a former kindergarten teacher, I feel like some teachers or administrators always say, well, they're kindergartners. And I'm like, and they're capable of doing incredible things. And then you show them. And once they realize what their kindergartners are capable of, it's a whole new light. How do you convince kindergarten teachers that their students can do it?
So I'll be honest with you. I don't always convince every kindergarten teacher. I in the particular school that I work a lot with, one of them will go back and do everything that I talk about. And one is kids can't really be, they got to sign in. It takes too long. And you know what? That's her journey. So I don't push and you know, when this other teacher does stuff, we share it out. And I hope that she'll come around. But some people just think that kindergarten is about often worksheets, learning to read, learning to write. And I just think it could be a lot more. And you know, because you taught kindergarten, they can do anything.
Anything.
Yeah.
They're so amazing. Mm-hmm. Like maybe, you know, they're learning letters and sounds and reading and writing, but with all the assistive technology out there right now, they don't have to know how to type to be able to produce content.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. And we'll talk about it a little later on. I'll tell you about a kindergarten example where they're using AI and they only typed in a sight word like got. And I thought that skill of typing in got, like watching it, I was like, this is so important. Where mm-hmm. other people would be like, oh, it takes too long for them to type got. Well, they could do text to speech to text. But really, them learning to type got was like blew my mind. Because they had to keep typing it.
Yeah, we have students log in with usernames and passwords in kindergarten, and everyone thinks that I'm crazy for making them do that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's very important for them to know how to, the first part of their username is their name, and they should learn how to type their name.
Yeah.
And it's okay. They're learning their letters, and and they have a card, and they find the letters, and it's part of kindergarten is learning letters. So I think it's a great skill to type words out.
Yep.
Even if they're just small ones. Like,
and as you know, in 2 weeks' time, they're going to be able to do that with no problem.
I know. I know. You just make it a center. That's what I always mm-hmm. would do. Make it a center, and that was an activity at center mm-hmm. time. And they get it. They catch on mm-hmm. fast.
And they want to do it.
Yeah. Okay, so Holly, you came out with a book this year called The AI Infused Classroom. So can you tell us a bit about your book?
Oh, well, thanks. I came out with this book because I saw right away, I've actually been talking about AI for quite a while. People wouldn't listen. And now they're listening. And I just really wanted to not talk about AI and what it is, but really how it can transform learning. So the book is really about that. There's a little bit of like, what is generative AI and stuff like that. But I really wanted people to think about the deeper learning experiences we can now have because this tool exists. So that's what the book is about. It's been a pretty good seller, so I'm really excited for that. And I hope it really opens people's minds instead of going down the wrong path of like, kids are going to use this to cheat.
Yeah.
Let's think about the ways in which we can stop them from cheating.
Yeah, I'm going to write a note to talk about cheating because I think that's important. But while we're on this topic of the education part, so I think that my next question for you, it's sort of related to that because there's so many of these, in quotes, because people that are listening can't see me, AI people out there. And I think I know what your answer is going to be, but what do you think makes you different than all these other AI people?
I think for me, it's because I'm looking at the student part of AI. And I wasn't at first because we were not in the journey where we could do that. And we are now in a place where we can talk about how can students use this to get at their own learning, to personalize learning, to do all of these things. And I think some people are still talking about like a teacher could use it for prompting and lesson plans. And that's great. They can. But I have been in this game for a while. And I've seen that some teachers take a while to move and to change. And so with student-facing AI, I can kind of leapfrog the teacher who's a little hesitant right now, get it in the hands of kids. They need to know how to use this tool. And then as the teacher sees how comfortable the kids are, I think that will bring them along.
Yeah.
Putting teachers in front of a program that lets them create new lesson ideas is great, but I don't think it's going to move the needle. And I want to move the needle.
Same. That's so funny because I did roll out teacher-facing AI last year. And this year we focus on student-facing AI. And I realize a lot of teachers are uncomfortable, like you're saying. So I did the bypass thing, but it is an ISTE standard to learn alongside your students. So what I did was I made it my mission because, you know, people are probably like, oh, Alana has this book and podcast. What is she doing in her district? So I needed to have something to say. Mm-hmm. So I pushed into every classroom and I taught every student, because we have a coding initiative. So I started in first grade, not that kindergarten's not capable, but we have a coding initiative in first. So I tacked it onto that. And just like, what is it? And we talked about AI bias, discrimination, all those things. But I had the teachers learn alongside the students. And as they saw the students using it and feeling comfortable with it, then they're more likely to do it. And I leveraged the teachers to teach each other at faculty meetings, not mm-hmm. me, their peers. Mm-hmm. So I've been leveraging students to teach teachers, students to teach each other, mm-hmm. teachers to teach each other. We have experts in our building, so like, let's use them,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
But I loved what you said about the student use. I'm flip-flopping my order a little because you had mentioned that you have been talking about AI before most people have. So on the show, what I do is I like to ask the previous guest for a prompt for the current future guest, and then mm-hmm. you're going to have to leave one for the next guest.
Okay.
But the prompt for you from the past guest is our good friend, Ken Shelton, and he said something about that. So I thought, is it appropriate time to bring it up?
So Holly, I have two layers of a prompt for you. My first prompt is to share with the audience the nexus between what you originally learned from Kai-Fu Lee about artificial intelligence and where you currently are. And the reason why I'm sharing that so that you could hear this is that Holly has, she had been talking about artificial intelligence years ago. And so, you know, it's interesting how a lot of names are all of a sudden propagated up, and she was talking about it years ago. So that would be my first prompt. And then my second prompt would be, based upon your historical knowledge of our artificial intelligence platforms and the way that they work, what do you see happening going forward? If you were a venture capitalist, where would you be putting your money at this point?
That's really interesting. Ken and I have been friends for many years. And I even said to you pre this podcast that I've been talking about AI for a long time. And I had people be like, oh yeah, well, I want to learn Google Slides. And I'm like, but you got... So I kind of a little bit gave up. I still had it in my keynote. And of course, now my keynote's all about AI. But I was drawn to one of the like godfathers of AI. His name is Kai-Fu Lee. And then Kai-Fu Lee recently wrote a book that's called AI 2041. And in it, he has chapters about what AI could look like in 2041. He has one specifically about education. And what he says about education is exactly where I am right now. And he said this back, you know, maybe 2022. And he said that every kid is going to have their own sort of AI assistant that knows their learning style, knows where they are, and is going to be there to kind of uplift them to get to the next level. And a lot of people hear that and think that that's going to replace the teacher, which I don't think it's going to do. I think it's going to open up doors for teachers to have better relationships, to do all those things that we've always wanted, to create these incredible lessons that now can happen because we have access to different resources. But I think what Kai-Fu Lee is talking about is exactly what we're going to talk about today, and that's student-facing AI. And I think a lot of people just have the wrong opinion of what student-facing AI is and what it should look like. As far as the venture capitalists, I think, honestly, student-facing AI is where I would put my money if I were a venture capitalist in education.
What type of student-facing AI? Because there's all different...
So I'm probably, I'm going to drill down into one app that I'm really fond of right now. And I don't know that this app will stay the one that I'm fond of or whatever, but there's an app called School AI. There's also another app much like it called Mizzou. There's Flint, but I'm really loving School AI right now. And School AI allows students to actually, we'll back up. It allows the teacher to create a sidekick, which is a managed AI agent. And in that sidekick, the teacher sets up guardrails. So let's pretend I'm in a fifth grade classroom and I'm doing a persuasive essay. I might set up a bot that works with students to come up with an idea. So let's say a fifth grader goes in and starts to work with this bot. Well, I've set it up to help that fifth grader pick the topic, to maybe get them started on research places that they could go, and maybe even help with an outline, but not write that essay for them. And so where me as the teacher can't get to every kid to help them pick a topic. So then they're like, oh, I'll just do animals. And they're not really invested in it. Right. And this AI can really help them think about that topic. So let's say a kid's using it and they say, I love Taylor Swift. Then the AI will say, that's great.
We all know that you like Taylor Swift.
The AI will say, well, that's great. What part of Taylor Swift do you like? Do you like her women empowerment, her lyrics, and then help the student drill down into what part of Taylor Swift that they would want to do for this persuasive essay? All the time, I'm watching on the back end of this, what every student is interacting and talking to the AI about. So I might go over to the student who likes Taylor Swift and go, I love Taylor Swift too. You're going to do lyrics? Oh, this is great. Or another kid who's doing like Messi, the soccer star, I might go over and say like, oh, you really like soccer. Here's some good things I've heard lately. And it gives me that opportunity to really help kind of take my student down the path I need to without going through, okay, what do you like? Oh, you like soccer. Well, what, you know, like I don't have time to do that with 30 students. So this AI assistant can help me get started. I can see everything that's coming through. I get a summary all the time of what they're doing. And now I can really help them with writing because that's my craft, not about the research and where to go or even the outline. And so it's really fantastic. Me and I like to say, I'm not saying, saying this should replace the teacher. I'm saying yes, and so me and this assistant can really help get the child to that learning goal, and it's amazing.
So on the topic of writing, so this is a really big one. I think that a lot of teachers are really hyper focused on that structured writing approach, and other teachers, like maybe us, like, okay, AI is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. So we need to evolve and change maybe writing, because I don't think I write in a traditional sense anymore. And I don't think you probably do either. A lot of people are also saying that you and I are capable of doing that because we've had that traditional writing instruction our whole lives. Now these children are growing up in a world where they're writing and having this AI partner. How do we teach the fundamental writing skills while we're evolving into this generative age?
So I think some shifts need to happen in what writing looks like. And they first need to happen in the editing process. Like, of course, a student should get their authentic work out there, but a kid with dyslexia can't. So what do we do with that? And an AI bot can help with that. But let's just say a kid has the capabilities and we're in second grade and we're helping someone write. Now we need to look at AI as a place, and I have a picture of this in this particular slide deck, where we were writing short stories with second graders. And they had to come up with a character, they had to come up with a problem, they had to come up with maybe some things that happened because of that problem. And we let the kids have an AI chatbot to do that. And then they took that and put it into graphic. They still wrote it into the graphic. And then they were going to, after they got some help from the AI, go and actually write that thing. But here's what happened. One of the students who was sitting at a table, who I happen to know, is not super high in her ability to write a story. She kept going over to the AI and she's like, okay, I want to have a turtle and a bunny or whatever. And then the AI was like, okay, we'll call the turtle this and we'll do this. And she wrote it down. And after a little while, she was working with the AI and she came over to me and she said, thank you for bringing this in, because I've always needed help. I couldn't come up with some of these ideas on my own. And I didn't want to raise my hand and ask. And so we have these teachers who believe that we have to teach to this traditional way in order for them to get the skills. But somehow we're just omitting the fact that there are kids in our classrooms who cannot do it on their own right now. And we're expecting, like, okay, kids, we're going to write a story today. And everyone just sit down and come up with your characters. And this is going to be fun. And they can't.
Yeah.
And there are some, well, I don't want to, like, high flyers or whatever. They're, you know, we'll call the Taylor Swifts in our classroom who can write on her own. And we don't want her probably using AI. But there are so many kids who just need a little assistance. And so they will become better at writing. And people are not able right now to shift their mind around the fact that we probably need to give a sentence written by an AI and a sentence written by a human, compare and contrast, critically think our way through that. What parts do we want to keep? And that becomes part of the writing process now. And I'm not here to try and say, oh, you're not thinking of that. That's crazy, whatever. I just want to be able to help shift teachers by giving examples of how that can look. And I've used AI instant feedback with fifth graders who got instant feedback on writing paragraphs and the growth. All you have to see for a moment is the growth and the difference between the first paragraph, got some AI feedback using CuraPod in this example, then wrote the paragraph again. The growth, what we know about instant feedback is like research-based. It's everything we know about neuroscience and kids and the brain and learning. And yet we're going to sit here and be like, well, they got to learn to write the traditional way. Yes, and... Yes, and
yeah. So I actually have a question for you about the feedback. So I know sometimes, well, again, we were trained in a traditional way, so we have that. Sometimes the feedback, if you're asking AI for feedback, it knows it needs to give you something. So it might just give you something to give you something. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So how do we teach? It's a two-part question. How do we teach students to critically analyze the feedback to make sure that it's actually good feedback, right? Because sometimes you get feedback and you're like, nope, I don't want to take that. Correct. Yes, I mm-hmm. do. And when they're learning those fundamentals, because we're talking about elementary now, how do we teach analyzing good feedback? And part two is how do we find that sweet spot with AI feedback versus teacher feedback?
Mm-hmm. So I think the teacher needs to give feedback if I start with the second part first. I think that it's really important that at the end, the teacher really talks to the student and makes sure that the final piece has a little conferencing between the teacher and the student. The AI chatbot allows for that. The AI feedback allows for the time in which to do that, because I taught 175 seventh graders. Don't think for a second I conferenced with all of those kids. No way. I'm here to tell you, true teacher confessions, it didn't happen. Now, when we have AI feedback, I think that the best way to start that is to, of course, mentor text our way through it by putting some feedback on the screen, talking with kids, which of this would we take? What things should we not? And building up those skills. I don't think that skill will be till second semester, but if we just ignore it, then it's never going to happen. So I think that we have to start putting that into our practice. We have to start putting into our practice, here's a paragraph by AI, here's a paragraph written by a student from another class. Let's deconstruct these. Now, obviously, this isn't starting in second grade. This is probably fourth grade and beyond. But it has to happen. Yeah. And as we hold on to the traditional, it feels like we're holding on to, I need a map in my car, but I have GPS. Like, you know, like there has to be some happy medium, and it doesn't have to be so dichotomous in our thing. Like, no, these kids have to write. No, the truth, we know this about almost everything, lies somewhere in the middle. Yeah. So if you're on the dichotomy and you're like, these kids need to learn to write and have authentic thought, just try for a second to say, what is their life going to be like 10 years from now?
Yeah, I also feel like at our core as an educator, our job is to help them be successful in their future, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, whatever their future is. Mm-hmm. And why do you need to write in the traditional sense?
Well, I think second grade teachers would say, well, they need to do a sentence. I agree. Now they need to see five other examples of that sentence that they created and talk through those. And that might be, I'm thinking about a second grade classroom I work a lot. That might be hard and it doesn't happen every lesson, but it needs to happen some.
Yeah, I love that. That was a really great example. So maybe we talked about cheating before, and this might be a good place because we're talking about feedback. A lot of people are scared of cheating.
Yeah.
And I do think that you were talking about your Taylor Swift's The Strong Writers. If they use AI, they're their teacher's not going to even question that they used it because mm-hmm. they're a strong writer. Mm-hmm. It's the less strong writers mm-hmm. where the teacher's going to be like, mm-hmm. that kid clearly used mm-hmm. AI. Mm-hmm. So how do you navigate?
Well, Alana, ask yourself the question right now. Why did that kid use AI? You just said they're low. They don't know where to get started. They don't know where to go next. So it's really easy to go over to AI and have it do that. That should be a teaching moment for teachers. If a kid is using AI to do the assignment, and I don't mean the whole assignment, that's a whole nother, we're always going to have some kids who are just cheaters, they're going to whatever. But if you have a kid that you know would try and they're not, that becomes a teachable moment. Why is it that that kid went over and used AI for this paragraph? Well, maybe they didn't understand the directions. Maybe they weren't motivated because they couldn't get past something. And that's where these AI assistants come in and help get the kid over that bump. I don't think that's going to eliminate cheating. We're always going to have cheaters. But cheating is a symptom of something larger.
Yeah. How do you figure out what that is? And
well, if you're a good teacher, I taught language arts for 25 years. If you're a good teacher, then you go and you talk to that kid about like, what went wrong here? Why did you feel the need? Because I can tell this isn't your language. This isn't your wording. What happened here? How could I support you further? Could I get you an AI assistant to help you get past this bump? Let's find out what that bump is. And let's work on that. And we can do that now with AI.
Yeah.
And that's what's exciting.
Yeah. I always say I'd rather my teachers do less essays, mm-hmm. but really focus on the learning process.
Yeah.
Not the end
product. Me too. Me
like,
too.
Make sure that student's growing because that yep. Taylor Swift is going to get A's every yep. year, no matter yep. what, but she yep. might not be growing. So let's focus on her growth and check right. in with her more and push her thinking, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And here's another thing. I've seen people do this actually on Twitter where they're like, I have a blog post and I didn't use AI to write this and I didn't whatever. And I think to myself, that is not a flex. That is not something you should be proud of. The fact, like, why the heck would you not use AI to check stuff, to rephrase? I just wrote an article for Edutopia about this school facing AI. You think I didn't use Gemini to rephrase some of the things because I was stuck?
Or Grammarly on yeah. everything that yeah. you use? Like, why would
am
you
I an idiot?
Yeah. Why would you not use it? Like you have a powerful tool in your hands to help yeah. you grow and be your yeah. best self. Like
yeah.
take advantage of the tools in your hands.
And I am a person who found out late in life that I had dyslexia.
So oh, I didn't always know that.
Yeah. So I've always wondered why it took me 8 hours to write a blog post where my friend Matt Miller can do it in an hour, right? And I learned later that the reason I couldn't was because of this dyslexia, not dyslexia where I'm switching letters, dyslexia where sounds are different in my head. And so like when I'm writing for Edutopia, those are my thoughts. That comes from all of my schooling. That comes from all work I do. But there are sometimes my wording of it was a little not so great. So of course I went to Gemini and said, just rephrase this. I didn't usually take it, to be honest, but it sparked something in me. So I think we need to be less afraid of that.
Do you use dictation at all or no, you do traditional typing?
Oh, I do everything. I do. And I don't do it exclusively, but if I am driving and I think of an idea, absolutely.
That's what I do a lot of dictation, mm-hmm. but now that I know that you have dyslexia, this is even more interesting. So how can AI support students with learning differences, neurodiverse students, multi-language mm-hmm. learners, because you struggled and now you probably feel like you have a tool to help you. So what would you say to a teacher who doesn't use it they all have students like this. Mm-hmm. What would you say to that teacher?
Well, let's first look at this. Right now, what we're seeing in schools is that the high flyers are using AI and they're doing it in ways that you wouldn't know because they know how to use it. They have the IQ to kind of figure out and deconstruct whatever. So those people are using it. And now they've got a tool to be like the whole system is messed up. The middle guys are like using it sometimes. They really don't know where to begin. And our low dyslexic struggling learners, ESL learners, don't even know where to begin because it's too, all of it's overwhelming for them. So we're creating another equity issue. And so for the dyslexic learner, like even in this school AI example with the persuasive essay, they've gotten down to what they're going to talk about with Taylor Swift. And now they can say, can you do an outline for me? That outline would have changed my life as a kid. I got away with not being diagnosed because I happened to have also a very high IQ to so that no teachers could see that I had this problem. I didn't even know. Yeah. And so those kids who have a high IQ or they're really good socially or whatever, we're not knowing that they have this problem. And just the mere thing of having an outline written or to go to the AI and say, this sentence isn't great. Can you help me with that? Will change their lives, literally. And English as a second language learner in a school, a student facing AI can go up to the settings and go between English and Spanish or whatever the language is so that they can be like, okay, I didn't get that. Let me put that in Spanish. And someone said this, sorry, I talk too much about this. So it's like, I have a lot to say, but someone said, sent me an email that someone had written and they said, this person said, I follow Holly Clark and I watch what she's doing. And I think she would say we should have AI in the classroom. And this person said, philosophically, then I would never agree with Holly Clark because kids should not be using AI. And my heart sunk because what do you say to the dyslexic? What do you say to the kid who's struggling and has processing issues, executive functioning issues? Like, oh, that's 30 to 40% of your kids.
Yes. Yeah. And like I said before, really our core, our job is to prepare students to be successful,
yeah.
Give them the tools
yeah.
so they can compensate for their learning
yeah.
differences because yeah. they're hopefully going to have a job one day and they might be dyslexic, but they could still do their job. Mm-hmm. If they have AI.
Mm-hmm. And no one knows. I found out during the pandemic, like, because this is really interesting. We all watched a lot of TV, right? And so you yeah. would watch these series, or I would, and mm-hmm. it would have at the end, Jeffrey Dahmer went on to whatever. Like, it's a horrible example, but it would be on the screen and I couldn't read it in time. And I went to my boyfriend and said, are you reading this in time? Like, or is this always so fast? And he's like, no, I read the whole thing. I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, why am I not reading it fast, like in time? And so then I started to do research and then I went to a doctor. Then I went to someone at my school and they like did tests and they're like, oh my God, you are so dyslexic. And I'm not little dyslexic. I'm major dyslexic.
Wow.
That's and incredible. Yeah. Anyway.
How did it change or did it change anything in your life? Just finding out.
Finding out made me not feel guilty for why I couldn't write in an hour. And why Matt and I, who do the same thing, he can get out all these blog posts. And I'm like, oh, I have one per month. And it's not because I don't have the knowledge. I can't. And so now I don't feel guilty anymore. Now I understand. And if I use AI to rephrase, I feel no guilt at all.
Yeah, I love that story. I love that. I feel like the way I wrote most of my book was actually through dictation. And that's how I've been writing the blogs that I'm going to start putting out. I think, you know, you speak so well. You have lots of ideas in your head. And to get them out through words is easy. That's how I feel. So what I did was I took my thoughts, I dictated them, and then I run them through AI to remove my filler words and make it more structured like a blog post or a book. And then I go back and edit it. So mm-hmm. I read it, it sounds like me mm-hmm. and looks like me. But yeah, I don't think I have maybe I have something. Who knows? I don't think I do.
No, because for me reading that blog post becomes a little bit harder too. It's not the comprehension part of it at all. It's just it takes a while and then I get distracted. So that's probably a different learning. But
do you anyway. Read books for fun or no?
Oh yeah. I read books all the time, but I listen. I can no longer read a book. Now I don't feel guilty about that. People used to make me feel guilty. You're not really reading a book because you're listening to it. And I'd be like, "What? I just listened to four books."
Yeah.
You know, anyway, so I've lost the guilt.
You do struggle with reading a text mm-hmm. paper book. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Always.
I didn't know that. No, I just thought that everyone
like
was doing it like that.
Yeah.
I got the best grades in my class. I went on to these great schools. So I thought, well, this is just how everyone does it. I had no idea that I was doing it slower.
That's amazing. I love that story. I'm glad you figured it out. That's amazing. Okay, so before we jump in and hear about all of the amazing things that you're doing, I asked our friend Adam Pease for a list of questions, and he said, ask her her favorite educational leader. And he wanted to know who, if it wasn't him, he was going to be mad. no, but in all seriousness, he did say, ask her about, and he gave me the top four bullets. I think you're going to cover them in your next segment where you're going to talk about the work you do. Then the bottom few, I was on a call last night about AI in the elementary classroom. I said, I'm interviewing Holly Clark on this topic tomorrow. So if you have questions, let me know. So these were questions that were fielded for you, maybe weaving them into the story you're going to share a bit next.
So we'll start with Adam Pease, a big fan. I got to work with him doing some stuff with students and chatbots recently. So I mean, the stuff he's doing and that's where my dyslexia comes in, by the way. I can't repeat sounds and people's names often. So if you ever meet me and I'm like, hi, and I'm not saying your name, not you, yours is easy, but I'm afraid of mispronouncing it. So that happens.
Well, but you anyway. Could just say, hi, it's so great to see you. And you don't even say names. You could just get away with it.
I do that a lot. But anyway, so Adam, I'm a big fan. But the person that I really love is another New Yorker, Heidi Hayes Jacobs. I am a big fan of her work and the way she looks at the way kids learn. So that's who my educational leader is. And I think I've already spoken about some of the questions about AI. These guardrails keep them safe. The app like School AI doesn't collect any student data. So it's, of course, safe, can be used K through 12. The guardrails I set up keep kids safe. The things I'm getting to see on the back end and the dashboard about what they're thinking about their persuasive essay helps me be a better teacher. And so, like, it's game-changing. It's game-changing, this School AI and apps like this. And there are other apps that have chatbots, by the way, that aren't quite as advanced as School AI, where the chatbot will say, if you said, I want to do a persuasive essay on Taylor Swift, it would give you three things to do. I don't want that. I want kids to dig deep into their voice, their choice, and their inquiry, not be told, here are three things you could do about Taylor Swift.
And I know there's been a little bit of heat. Someone recently wrote an article, I don't remember who it was, about Conmigo and how it doesn't have a heart. So what do you think about these chatbots that, you know, it's not the same as a teacher and people are criticizing them a little bit?
Yeah, so that person has it right on the thing. It doesn't have a heart. That's why teachers will keep their job, because they do have the heart. And so we're not trying to replace the heart. We're trying to just get you over the hump for a dyslexic or whatever. And if it has a heart, then what's my job? So I need to be the person with the heart, the person with the pedagogical background, the person who's forming relationships with kids. So I'm glad it doesn't have a heart, to be honest with you, because that's my expertise.
You know what's so cute? In my school, before students are using it for their own feedback, we started giving them feedback on their work, and we give them AI feedback and human teacher feedback. So the way we differentiate for them so they know, and I don't really like to use the robot emoji. So if you could think of a better emoji for AI, let me know. But we use a little robot one for the AI feedback and a heart for the teacher feedback.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
That's a super great idea, actually.
Yeah, because we want them to know, like, the heart. We're here. Mm-hmm. We care about you. Holly, why don't you tell us what you've been doing with AI in elementary school classrooms?
So it started the way that you described, right? I was doing teacher-facing AI. I think we all did. We were pretty excited by what we saw, and that could get teachers using the AI and see how powerful it was. But like with everything we've ever done in education, 20% of teachers jumped in. And 80% didn't. And those 80% were pretty vocal about it. So I've shifted, now that this School AI and Mizzou have come out, to using AI chatbots when needed, not all the time, with students to really help them with idea development, with skills, with maybe addressing language barriers. And in this, we're showing, we're showing a picture where a kindergarten class, the kids are coming on, we sort of talked about this, to practice sight words. So the sight word of the day in this one was got. So the kids went and signed in and the AI said, what's the sight word you would like help with? And the kid typed in got, and she said, okay, here's a sentence with got. I got a red balloon. And would you like another? And the kid could either type in yes or got again. And got would get another example. I got a new car. And they kept hearing this sight word in the chatbot, which is not game changing, but they loved it. They kept hearing got and hearing got. And then they picked from those their favorite sentence. So when they had to go write the sentence on a piece of paper, they're getting to write all these new words. I got a red balloon. Those are exciting new words for kindergarten.
For sure. Yeah.
And the teacher can't sit up there and be like, I got a red balloon. I got a new Ferrari. I got tickets to Taylor Swift. I got whatever, you know, like so it really helped. And the kids, they were into it. And they use the speaker that is in the app to read it to them. And so I got a red balloon was being said all over the classroom.
We just used, it's a little off, but not really. Have you tried Reading Progress yet at all?
Oh, I love Reading Progress in Microsoft.
The one with AI.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. We love it in my school. Yeah. And I just recorded kids today because I wanted their feedback about why they love it. They're like, it's AI and we could create our own stories. And they were talking about all these weird, wild, crazy ideas that they have in their head, and now they could bring them to life. So this is maybe about writing what you're talking about, but it's sort of related because they're writing their words, but then they're reading. And then one of them, they were 8. They were like, it helps me with my fluency. And I was like, wow, I didn't even know you knew what that was.
Yeah, it's such a great program. I can't believe people don't use that. That's a game changer.
I know. I mean, the second that it was available, we started using it. And now that it's a standalone application, that was a little bit more game changing for us. Mm-hmm. And now that it's built in with AI, because before the teacher was uploading their own passages, and then we got creative with it, and we were creating passages using AI and then uploading those. But now the kid feels ownership in the story. And
that's exactly right.
Yeah, they're making their own story and then reading it. And it's similar. It just reminded me of what you were talking about.
So, and also in this kindergarten class, I went to debrief with the teacher afterwards. I'm like, so did you like it? What'd you think of it? And we were talking about it, and his third grade son came in, and he's like, wait, you used AI in your class? I want to use AI. Like that's the experience kids have right now.
Yeah.
And might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah. It's cool. It's new. It's fun. Mm-hmm. They just like talking about it too. Mm-hmm. They really do. Oh, so this is something else. It's a like slightly off topic, but we're talking about kids loving it and talking about it. So obviously it's built into like lots of tools out there. And we're talking about the older end of the spectrum, you know, we hope that they follow the laws and don't make accounts for things until they're 13 or whatever the law is. It's in Snapchat and things like that. And it says my AI. Mm-hmm. So they see the word my AI. They see AI. They talk to AI chatbots. Some of them, if you know, they probably shouldn't be under 13, but different story. But they have this different experience of AI outside of school versus AI inside of school. So what do you think about that? We need to really reframe what they think about it in school. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, I think right now they don't know what they can do to collaborate with AI, and tools like school AI help kids see like, wait, I can ask it questions about George Washington. I can get more information about the Stamp Act, which is generally not that interesting. You want to make the Stamp Act interesting, bring in an AI chatbot.
Yeah.
And it will be, instead of like walking in and being like, we're going to learn about the colonial times today, let's open up our chapter. Open up George Washington and let them talk to him about what was happening. What were people like fearful of? And it, in the next slide, I actually have one with fifth graders in Darien, which is close to you. Huh. They're using it in this colonial example. And what I did with the guardrails is I set this up and I took the state standards for Connecticut. I put it into the chatbot and said, based on these state standards, I want kids to interact and ask questions and get to know the Stamp Act or whatever. And you can see on this slide, and people can't see it, and I hope I can see what it says, but I'm getting information about Liam in this case, understands the impact, thank you, of taxation without representation on the desire for independence among the colonies. So I'm getting to know that he's getting this kind of concept. Yeah. It looks like Liam and Matthew came in a lot after I left because it's all about them. But Matthew demonstrated understanding of the impact of the French and Indian War. I mean, that's good information to have.
Yeah.
And so he did this all by talking to a chatbot I set up called American Revolution, which should have been called about the American colonies. But and they were thrilled.
Yeah.
All they wanted to do is talk to this chatbot. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So you have examples that you shared of you using it where they're chatting with a chatbot. And so now how do you see it being used? Like, let's separate the grade bands, because the younger end of the spectrum in kindergarten is very different from that older end of the spectrum, which is fourth or fifth grade, depending mm-hmm. on your school.
Mm-hmm.
How do you see it progressing from K?
So, well, in the kindergarten example, we're just typing in got. We're getting examples of the sight word got, whatever. In fifth grade, they're doing that thing like I talked about, like breaking down this persuasive essay assignment and getting help on that. Getting to talk to, this is actually a fifth grade classroom in Darien, getting to talk to the colonists. So it's interactive. It's giving them like a different into this information rather than I have to read it. And there are people, I'm sure, who are sitting around going, nope, kids have to read in order to. That is so not true. And that's where we are in writing. Like,
I mean, one of my friends, her husband is literally blind. He cannot see. I don't think anyone would say he can't read. Like, he listens to things like you listen to books.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't be like, oh, he can't read. Like, he's blind. He can't read in the traditional sense.
Yeah, he can't decode. Read.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like this is really transforming the way that they're engaging with text of both input and output mm-hmm. of text.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
These are great, really great examples. I really love that. And so do they do any dictation in this, or are they all just
in those kindergarten and second grade, they're dictating only. And then they're listening. There's a button that says speak. And so it speaks the answers. And then the kid does go over and look, like in the second grade example, when it said, your turtle is going to be Joey and your bunny is going to be Bella. And then the kids come over on their little graphic organizer and write, Bella is the bunny and Joey's the turtle or whatever it was. And it's really cute to watch.
Yeah.
And they feel like, okay, I got my characters. You know how many times second graders have felt like, I don't know, stare at a blank page.
Or
I can't
you
get started.
A list to help them get started. But now they're taking ownership.
So yes.
Reading progress.
You see it. Yes.
Yeah. They're like, I get to create my own story of ownership in the choices.
Yep.
That's really incredible. I think that Adam told me, maybe I'm mistaken, that you have a computer where they, right here. Yeah. How does that work?
In that example, Adam and I had gone in with a writing group and put in the checklist, the examples, the mentor text that go with this writing. And the kids had typed in like their first sentence and asked for feedback. And the chat gave feedback. That was sort of 2023 vibes, right? It wasn't 2023. It was actually 2024, early 2024. But we've progressed past that. And that honestly, that statement that I've said right now, that we've progressed past that, I don't think most teachers know that we have. They're still not even knowing that this exists. Where I'm like, well, we progressed past that already in the last 6 weeks. Teachers have no idea what's going on in AI.
I know. That's what I was going to say to you. Like, you're in my world. We're like, we've gotten past that.
Yeah.
Some people have never even opened it or touched it still.
Yep. Yeah.
And a lot of school districts too, like as a whole, I'm shocked at the conversations I'm having right now where they haven't addressed it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, it's 2024 right now.
Yep.
How? I just don't understand.
Well, and it's an equity issue. if you're not addressing this at this school, but somebody in Darien is, or in your school district, that's just another hole in the equity gap. So that's just not okay. And every school is like, no, we're into equity. It feels like, no, you're not, if you're not dealing with AI.
Yeah, it's true. It's really true. I'm going to share on my next episode of my podcast about how I used it in the creative writing process. So that's going to be a whole episode. But I'll just share with you quickly here. This was a really great example when you're teaching them prompting. This girl.
Oh, I love AI image generation.
Oh yeah. So we didn't even talk about that. You only talked about text. I think that AI image generation in the elementary classroom is game changing.
Because
if you are the teacher and you're giving the student feedback, then they're just like annoyed. Like, stop telling me what to do.
Yeah.
But if you're putting their prompt in the AI and the AI is not giving them the image that they have in their head, you're like, I'm going to help you. I'm on your team. I'm your coach. I'm going to sit next to you and we're going to get through this together. Let's get the AI to get the image that's in your head on the page. So I felt like AI image generation was really game changing. I feel like you would really appreciate this lesson. To hear all about this lesson, you're going to have to tune in next time. But let's hear what Holly thinks.
Oh, great.
These
this
are
is really good.
Third graders.
Yeah.
Third graders.
Yeah. Can we just talk about third graders understanding algorithm? And I mean, there's so much there. That is so much more important than some of the things that they learn in third grade. Anyway, like, don't get me started.
I know.
The critical thinking of that. And people say, and you hear this all the time, and it's so hard for me to hear, I think that this is going to stop critical thinking. And I'm like, you just haven't seen it in like this example that you're sharing.
So what I felt was like image generation was a lot easier for teachers to grab onto. When I showed them the text, they're like, my kids need, we need to write, we need to focus on writing. I'm like, okay. And then when I brought this example in, that felt a lot more comfortable for teachers.
Yeah.
It felt very comfortable for them to write sentences and get an image. And now that was like the gateway. And then and it opens the gates to much more AI. But I think my recommendation for anyone that's hesitant, if you're an elementary teacher, is try image generation first and you'll feel like really comfortable with that. And then all the things that Holly told us about with the AI chatbots, you'll feel like a little bit more comfortable using AI and your students will understand it a bit more. Do you have any other advice or feedback for teachers that are thinking about it?
Well, I do exactly what you're saying. I start with AI image generation. It is a big, teachers love it. Students love it. And then we get to the AI that's the chatbot. So I think what you've started there is exactly the way that I've done it. And that's what people need to do. Start
that
with AI image generation and chatbots. And yes, it can help you make a better lesson plan if you want. Yes, it can write some multiple choice questions for you. But really, my goal in this AI is that we don't need to ask multiple choice questions anymore because we're getting at such deeper thinking.
Yeah.
And that's my goal for this. And I hope by 2026, we're getting somewhere close to that.
So I know that we can't predict the future because we never would have predicted that this would happen. But if you could predict, like if nothing else really changed and it was the way it is, what do you predict in a year from now or 2 years from now, what you hope the future of education looks like? So, because for me, that's like my whole focus. I think we're very aligned on that. We focus on the future of education in a world with artificial intelligence.
Yeah.
What do you think about that?
I envision it that every student, no matter what their background, meaning do they have parents that can help them? Are they dyslexic? Whatever, has an assistant that is always helping them, that we have put data into that assistant. We know the problem areas. That assistant maybe would have identified me as dyslexic back in the day. So that every kid has that little helper that's going to get them over the bump where they would normally cheat or where they wouldn't be able to keep up with the rest of the class so that we equalize education.
So my final three questions, one creative way use AI, both personally, professionally. So why don't we start there?
I think that I use AI to do some things in my writing. Like I ask it, are there any holes in this thing that I'm saying, like with this Edutopia article? Am I missing anything a teacher needs to know to be able to comprehend this? And I don't think a lot of people are using AI to ask those kinds of questions. I also personally, I recently, and this is sad, but it's an important story. I lost my dog and she was only 12 years old and she was quite healthy. People had been calling her a puppy and I was away at ISTE actually, and she stopped eating. And when I got home, she had gone 7 days without eating and there was something wrong. And I took her to the vet and the vet told me these things. And she said, she has pancreatitis. And I was like, looking at the symptoms of pancreatitis, I'm like, she does not have this. And so I went to AI. And in pancreatitis, you have to only eat protein. So I was just giving her protein, all chicken all the time, trying to get her to eat. And she wouldn't eat much, but I got her to eat some chicken. And then she got super sick, like so sick, I had to take her to the emergency room. She was like a drunk. She was like in a toxic shock. And I'm sitting in the emergency room at the vet. And I decided to go to ChatGPT and I put in this is a 12-year-old Shih Tzu and she has these symptoms. And what do you think it could be? And it came back and said, oh, that sounds like something with liver disease. And so I went into the emergency room and they did like an ultrasound. They're like, I think she has pancreatitis. And I'm like, no, she doesn't have pancreatitis. Like, I know my dog. And so another vet comes in and I say, well, actually, I think she has a liver disease. And the two of them are sitting there and they say to me, are you a doctor? And I said, no, I'm working with ChatGPT on this because I can't get any answers. And they're like, well, her blood work does show, you're right, she has something going on with her liver. Uh-huh. And then they were able to take out this, so she had something in her brain. They were able to take kind of that out of her blood and get it out. I think it was ammonia. And said, with this disease, the dog should have no protein. And I'm like, great. Like if I would have just walked out of here and I didn't have ChatGPT, I would have went home, fed her more protein and she would have been dead in 2 days. I got another 4 months out of her, which when you're a dog owner, you'll take any amount of time you can have. Yeah. But personally, that's how I used it.
I love that.
And it was a game changer.
I love that story. I think that a lot of doctors are probably really scared of this, mm-hmm. but you know, what's so interesting. So if you haven't followed him, Microsoft Education's Chief Innovation Officer, Michael M.J. Jabor, he was the keynote at NiceGate, and I was very fortunate to be able to sit down and interview him. His background is fascinating. He has actually a PhD in Chinese medicine, and he was telling me that the data has proven that if you're going to get bad news from about a medical condition, that people would prefer to have the AI give them the bad news than a human doctor. I found that really interesting. But it's like the flip side of you pretending to use the AI for the patient side. But there's also the doctor side of it too, which is, I think that, and he was saying in the interview a lot about how now everyone in the educational world, how we talked a lot about having a tutor. We have tutors in the medical field. Everyone will have access to some type of medical help. Maybe it not might not be, you know,
for sure they will
human, but at least they have a point of entry to get medical assistance.
Yeah,
which is better than not having anything at all.
Well, and every kid's going to have access to assistance soon.
Yeah,
and that's what's exciting. We're going to have it medically. They're going to have it educationally, and I think it's going to be beautiful.
Yeah,
I may be a tech optimist. See, I can't say certain words and I never understood why either, but optimist, but I really believe it's going to open up a pretty cool world.
I know. I love that. That's a third question. Wait, so one creative way you use it professionally.
Oh, I think I said I use it to ask for holes. Here's one other thing though. I will, before I go to a school district, I will ask them to give a survey to teachers and I will take that survey and download it and put it into ChatGPT-4, which will analyze data. And it will tell me, here are the trends. Here are the things you need to give to these teachers to help them move to the next spot in their learning. And that's game changing. That, like, I've literally sat and been like, oh my gosh, that's exactly what I need to do. So it's been fantastic.
I love that. And now, where do you draw the line? When would you never use AI?
I don't think I would use it to write a book and never check it. You know what I'm saying? Like, or even write a blog, completely write a blog post. I would definitely have it check for grammar and holes in the argument and whatever. But I wouldn't do it to say, this is my writing. And everyone should assume if you see something from me, it's been touched by AI. It just has.
Is there anything else that you would like to share with us about AI, AI in education, or anything else? Any final words?
The only thing I would say is that today I'm talking about school AI. And when we're talking about image generation, that's going to change. In a month, you might hear me talking about something else. But and I think that's our jobs, is to kind of stay at the forefront of it so we can give examples. And yeah. So I don't want anyone to be like, oh, she's the school AI girl, because I don't work for school AI. I don't do any, like, whatever. Yeah. It's just I find that's an interesting place where we are right now. So you may hear me talk another time and it might be something different. It's all evolving.
So that's going to lead me to my next thing. Where can we find you? If someone wants to keep hearing all the things that you're talking about, where should they? I know it's not LinkedIn. And if you go to LinkedIn,
not yet. Yeah, I have a LinkedIn account. But so I do most of my sharing still. Maybe it's very giving 2017 vibes, but on Twitter but also TikTok, and for as long as I'm able. And I try to make more like 1 minute videos. I like to call them 1 minute PD, because I think hearing about it is better than reading about it for some people. And maybe that's my dyslexia. That's why I tend to go to TikTok.
Yeah. I need to start getting on the TikTok bandwagon. I'm not there, but I'm also a Twitter or X girl. So I'm with you on that one. All right. Holly, it's been so great having you on. I'm really excited to continue following your work and like hopefully meet you in real life soon, maybe at ISTE.
So can I tell you one thing about ISTE and then we can end? Yes. So I'm working with ISTE on a special AI immersive space. Uh-huh. And so it's going to be a place where you go and you can like feel like a kid getting this AI instruction, maybe something even like your like AI image generation, things like that. So I didn't really know about this immersive space myself, and I'm a longtime ISTE person who goes to as many sessions as I can. But I wanted people to know that that's going to be there. And I'm really excited for what it's going to look like and how it will feel and be.
Yeah. Well, you are incredible. I really thank you so much for your time, like before talking and during. And I'm really glad I met you. And I'm really excited to keep learning because I follow you, but now like I know you. Mm-hmm. So I'm excited to keep the conversation going.
Me too. And somewhere on this desk, I have your book.
Oh, that's so
nice. Even though it's very hard for me to read, I still can scan.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of The Generative Age, powered by Nicescape. For a deeper dive, check out my new book titled, How'd You Guess? The Generative Age, now available on Amazon.
Our journey may pause here, but the conversation doesn't need to end.
Stay connected and informed by following me on social media at Alana Winnick and subscribing to my newsletter, all conveniently accessible on my website, alanawinnick.com.
Don't just listen, be a part of it. With your free Nicescape membership, you can join these live discussions, enroll in our free Generative Age Nicescape community, where you can share resources, ask questions, and collaborate with like-minded colleagues. If you enjoyed this podcast, consider leaving a review and telling a colleague or a friend.
We've got so much more in store, so be sure to join us next time for another exciting conversation. Until then, keep learning and keep growing in the generative age.